You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus from New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. This is The Public Eye. I'm Malvoni, your host. Nice to have you with us this week. You can deny it all you want. You can you can downplay it. But I think at some point, whether it's this year or over a course of years, any given time, all of us, we fret, we worry, we get nervous about, our financial position, what's happening in the economy. There's an election coming up. What do I do with my money? Should I be in the stock market? Should I sell? A host of questions that I think every one of us at some point in our life certainly have to deal with. And it can certainly cause a lot of, a lot of tension, a lot of stress on individuals. That's why I've invited my guest this week, Richard Carr, the CEO and the principal of Carr Financial here in Worcester. And I've asked Richard to come on and talk about some of the things that are really going through everyone's mind, especially, as I said, this year specifically, going into to the election, what that may have in store, some of the moves that the Fed is making, and what's the best play for you and your family in terms of your assets. Richard, nice to have you with us.
Al, I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I think some of the things that I said at the outset certainly are not new to you. I'm sure you get phone calls, weekly, daily emails from people, clients, prospective clients, asking the same questions. Richard, what do I do? Should I get out of the stock market? Is the Fed going to have an impact? Is the election going to have an impact? What do you tell people who are just stressed out about, especially older folks, people who are on the brink of retirement, people who are retired and want to preserve their assets and what they have. What do you say to them?
Well, I first like to remind folks we're human beings, and at an instinctual level, we have emotions. We have these instincts that drive our behavior, and two of the most powerful ones are fear and greed. And they're on the opposite ends of the spectrum. And when it comes to making decisions about money, I mean, money itself is not what we want. We want what money provides: security, peace of mind. And at our core, fear drives us, greed drives us in opposite directions. And when you think about money, it is your entire future, your path forward, your peace of mind that's at stake. So I truly understand why it gets to our most core of our human nature and taps into those things that cause these emotions that drive decisions, sometimes hasty decisions. So I just ask people, first of all, let's just acknowledge everybody goes through the same thing, but eventually the ideal circumstance is that you've accumulated a nest egg sufficient to provide you the lifestyle you want going forward. It's enough. And it's a concept. We work with an awful lot of college interns. Having the discussion around just that term, enough, again, it taps into a lot of emotions. And when is enough enough? And, the shoot from the hip answer is there's never enough. But in fact, there really is. And once you've reached that point and you've allocated your portfolio appropriately, given your age and your risk tolerance, you can put your head on the pillow at night. It doesn't matter what happens in the world. You're going to be just fine. And that's what we strive to do, is try to help people find that sense of enough and then allocate their portfolio accordingly so that money does, again, what it's best at, gives you that peace of mind.
Again, I think you're more tuned into this than the average person. There's so many people out there claiming to be, the financial guru of the century, or the person who will tell you how to, how to preserve your assets, your capital, et cetera. And, you'll get it back and forth, real estate, stocks and bonds, and back and forth. I remember as a very young man, really feeling comfortable just listening to Warren Buffett. He seemed to be more down to earth and whatnot. And his belief has always been, the stock market and just keep, never mind about the ups and downs, just whatever you can put away each month, each week, whatever it may be. And that'll keep you, in 10, 15, 20 years, 30 years, you'll retire with a healthy nest egg. Is that still apropos? Is that still valid?
It is, except unfortunately, and I always have a tough time. I'm in this industry, but I think despite all the regulatory agencies, all of the rules that govern behavior of advisors, there are just a huge faction of industry, sub-industries and folks out there who pitch themselves as, I know what the future holds. I can absolutely tell you how to make more money in the future. And it's all poppycock, but people believe it. It is amazing to me. There was an ad on the radio years ago for Liberty Bonds, and you deserve what the government is offering. Liberty Bonds, call us today. It was an oil and gas investment. Talk about risky. So I'm always disappointed that the industry hasn't done a better job to rein it in. And then for some reason, I don't know why, we've made life just so complex. And when it comes to investing, even more so, there are just a vast array of products, of these proposed strategies that are out there. And the internet has been a wonderful tool, and it's, you know, over my 34-year career, sort of a new element. It provides a lot of really objective information that can help you as an investor make good decisions. It's finding that objective information. You always wonder when you're on a website and you're looking at information, is it biased? Whether it's, you know, political, financial, whatever it is, and that plays out in our industry a lot too. And you can find, for example, what seems to be some really objective information on a certain website, and then you might come to realize that they're driving your thinking toward a specific strategy that they just happen to have ads for running on the bottom of the website and are trying to steer you toward that particular strategy. But your point is valid. The best approach, and Warren Buffett had an advantage. He didn't buy 1% of a company. He'd buy the whole company.
Yeah, right.
But it's just fundamentals. Is the company profitable? Is it making something or providing a service that you expect people are still going to want and need in the coming decades? And is it trading at a reasonable price? And if it is, then that's a good long-term investment. So I like the Warren Buffett strategy. It's not sexy. It doesn't get a lot of TV time, but it has made people a very healthy rate of return for an acceptable level of risk when you just make decisions based on fundamentals and not on the next supposedly hot stock of the moment.
Yeah, good advice. The other question, and this plays in more now than perhaps 40 or 50 years ago, the government. You get different stats each and every day. Now, there's a lot more hype now because the election is coming up. You know, who will provide a better 4 years in the economy? The Fed has just lowered rates as of last week. That had an impact, I should say, on the stock market. I guess my question to you would be: does the government really have the right information, and are they in a position to really provide stability if indeed the economy tanks for whatever reason?
So we might as well talk about the elephant in the room when it comes to thinking about investments going forward, the election. I like to remind clients that politicians have one job. It's to get elected or reelected. So often what they propose, suggest in the months leading up to an election feel good, sound good, but are never going to materialize. Some of the proposals on both sides are economic disasters, and there's very, very little chance, in my opinion, we'll see them materialize. But my gosh, it sounds wonderful out of the gate, and it garners votes for those politicians. So I try to remind folks that fiscal policy on the government side is determined by Congress, and Congress has the same goal, to get elected and reelected, and they don't want to be the one out there saying, hey, we did what's right, we reined in spending, and we're raising taxes. Vote for me. They won't have a job in the coming election.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's scary, and the thing I'm thinking about, and you probably were keened in on this as well, if you remember, just as COVID started to really impact not only this country, but the global world, both individuals' lives, everyday lives, and certainly the economy. And then you started hearing reports, as you said, of this, many of these politicians dumping huge amounts of stock. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I thought there was a law that said that if you have any any information that the average citizen doesn't have, or if you have somebody who can give you a steer you in the right direction before any disaster. And I really I took offense at that, and I thought, some of these people have had, granted, they're in politics, maybe they have their ear to the ground, and maybe they hear things long before the rest of us, but that played as an advantage to many of them. And then they went and sold stocks, made a lot of money by selling those stocks before they tanked, and I'm talking about a lot of pharmaceutical companies too. Is that, again, does that leave people to scratch their head and say, who's really looking out for the average investor?
Nobody. And Al, you thought laws applied to members of Congress? I'm surprised by that. It is nobody in the end. And really, the most value, I feel like, for folks who are in our industry, who are ethical or guided by principles that go beyond just whatever the bottom line happens to be for their particular company, you have this obligation to try to protect your client and protect their portfolio. I said at the outset of the show, it's their entire future, and you have this ethical obligation to protect them, and that means just understanding how the system works. Yeah, Al, I was the same way. I was bitter and angry, but I can tell you there's countless times that I've looked at circumstances where people got very wealthy in ways that skirted the law, that I considered immoral, certainly unethical, but skirted the law and left them, holding bags of money at the expense of you and I, of regular folks, investors who are just trying to make a little bit of a return so they can maintain their lifestyle. Generally, even our wealthiest clients aren't looking to buy Ferraris and, $10 million mansions and things like that. They're just looking to provide for their family, to spend money when they need to, for the experiences they want, for the things they need, certainly. And when folks get away with stuff like this by skirting the law, it's discouraging, to say the least. I wish things were easier. I wish the laws were easier to understand. I wish they were more applicable and that there weren't so many loopholes that left people with these paths to make money on the backs of average investors.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, and I think most of our listeners are certainly feeling that, get that sense and saying the same thing to themselves. Why should one be held to a certain standard and the rest don't have to be? I want to just take a quick pause to remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. This is The Public Eye. I'm Al Vona, your host. My guest this week is financial guru Richard Carr of Carr Financial here in the city of Worcester. And I've asked Richard to come on, and I think it's just an apropos time going into an election year. Many people are wondering whether or not the economy is going to be affected by the election and so many other factors that are playing in. And the economy is always, I think, one of the top things on people's minds. Richard, going back to something we talked about a little bit earlier, and I've been a believer of this, and I just want to get your sense. And I believe that, as you said, most people just trying to build a portfolio or a nest egg so that they have, at the end, when they're ready to retire, when they're ready to say, hey, look, I've had enough of the real world, I want to take a break, that they have that money there to provide for their families. I believe that it's just stay the course, stay steady. Don't let outside influences, rule your mind or take over. And most importantly, and I'm glad you said it more than anybody else, don't go out and buy that Mercedes or Ferrari. You don't need a third house, down in Florida or in the islands. And you know people, and I know people who have done that. And hey, you know what? If you've worked hard and you can pull it off, hey, more power to you. But the bulk of us can't do that, and we're just trying to reach that that finish line with enough assets that'll carry us through. So is that part of the mantra that you expound to your clients and to anybody that may ask you the question? Just stay the course and don't try and beat the market. Don't try and buy assets that don't have true value, and you may indeed, with that philosophy, reach your goals.
Yeah, I think, Al, it's actually a difficult concept for most folks. And, you know, the folks who fall victim to these get-rich scams aren't the wealthiest clients or wealthy clients. They're the ones who have less that maybe waited in life or had to wait in life to start saving for retirement, that want to make up for lost time. And they want to believe there's a magic pill and magic bullet that's going to cause their portfolio to, you know, triple every 3 years. And they fall victim to these scams. So, it's just the fundamentals. It's very unsexy. But asset allocation, you pick different categories. And there is an opportunity there, by the way, to be tactical. You can say going forward, geez, I wonder if people are still going to want to be healthy next year and next month and next decade. Probably. So I bet healthcare is an industry that'll probably be around for our lifetime and our kids' lifetime and grandkids' lifetime. Of course it will. But AI is getting a lot of attention lately, artificial intelligence. And I got to be honest, it feels a little to me in my belly here that it's like internet. When the internet came out, people were buying stocks hand over fist. They couldn't tell me what the company did, what kind of revenue it had. In many instances, people were buying stocks for companies that were hyped. Back then, it was magazines and newspaper and snail mail, but they were being hyped. The companies didn't even have revenue. Forget about profits. They had no revenue. So AI, right, the industry, subset of the tech industry, really tempting, really amazing stuff going on there. And, yeah, there'll be some companies that win, but in the end, if you can average a rate of return for an acceptable level of risk that you consider competitive, that's going to be enough for you to get what you want in life, provide for the family you have in the way that you envision, that's all that's there. Asset allocation, diversification, unsexy, but that's how you build wealth.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I mean, personally, I've always held to the belief that, you know, don't fear the stock market, and as you said, allocation more conservative, maybe bonds, and then, you know, in the early years of your life where you're still, you know, young and you got 20, 30, 40 years, you know, to go before retirement, you know, the stock market is still, and I guess that's the main question, is the stock market as we know it today, not 20, 30, 40 years ago, is the stock market still a viable launching pad for people, as you said, that want to have a comfortable
sure.
nest egg?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, today I would argue the average stock is overpriced. And how do I make a statement like that? Well, I just look back at the history of the relationship of a company to its profits and expected profits going forward. And we happen to see most stock prices, especially in the AI industry, trading above what is the accepted historical average. So that gets you to scratch your head a little bit. But if you sit back and said, you know what, I've got some money in financial stocks, banks and insurance companies. I've got some in healthcare. I've got some in biotech. I've got some in international stocks. I've got some bonds. You know, for 20 years, I couldn't even say bond to a client without them, you know, scrunching up their nose. We have bond yields in the fives. So you can have an investment that more safely than a stock investment can grow at about double the rate of inflation. So even net of taxes, you have some real growth in bonds. You should have some of your eggs in that basket. And that, I think, it sounds, again, very simple, simplistic, but that's how wealthy people do it. Real estate, by the way, is not a bad idea. We have plenty of folks who have built their wealth with real estate over time. If you own the real estate directly, a lot more elbow grease
yeah.
goes into that. But sure, we help people decide what's the best path for them, what avenues make the most sense. We help folks vet even business plans that they've thought about, businesses they thought about starting, and help them understand the obstacles they might have they didn't foresee and opportunities maybe they haven't thought about tapping into. It's broad-based financial planning. It isn't just about allocating a portfolio.
Yeah, good advice. And I don't want to get discriminatory here, and some people are probably going to say, you know, Vony, you did it again. Age. And what I mean by that is I'm old enough to remember my grandparents and my parents talking about those who came out of the, you know, out of the Depression, you know, when it really affected the entire country, even the very wealthy had felt the impacts. And that gives you a sense of, that causes you sometimes to take a step back and say, whoa, wait a minute. You know, every now and then a dark cloud will come over. I think that there has been, at least for younger people, there's really been no derailment in terms of finance. I'm not saying that people haven't fallen on hard times. They certainly have. But nothing in recent memory, 20, 30 years, that I recall, to where people can say, whoa, you know, I remember that period, and, you know, we almost lost everything, but I stayed the course, or we listened to our financial advisor and we didn't get panicky. My question is, do older people tend to be more conservative? Do older people tend to be more careful about their finances versus younger people?
Well, Al, I have so much to say on that topic. 34 years in this industry, I have lived through some unthinkable market cycles. I mean, 9/11 comes to mind as one example. Things that just completely unexpected that really shook people to the core, their confidence in everything, and understandably so. But pain is a funny thing. We tend not to remember the severity of the pain years in the future when it's more of a distant memory. And I try to remind folks, in 34 years, we've lived through some really epic events. And the 08-09 period, the mortgage meltdown, the banking financial crisis, we're already seeing folks who don't even remember the agony of that 45% decline in the S&P 500 over a 12-month period, and they're more forward-looking optimistic. So you got to figure out who you are, how you're wired. Are you an opportunistic person? Are you a risk taker? Are you not? And we used to talk about retirement in terms of about 15 minutes. You remember great-grandparents, grandparents, they'd retire, and their life expectancy was 2 years ago, and they would die in the year or two into retirement. Today, retirement is a 30-plus year period.
Yeah.
So we're seeing all kinds of sociological changes that are really fascinating to witness, but also a need for even older people to have some growth in their portfolio to make sure that they can accomplish those, you know, basic goals I've described a few times, just the ability to live the life they want to live, have the money that's available to them, and peace of mind to be able to sleep soundly at night.
A great advice on terms of the age. I think most people, I know personally family members and friends well into their mid-90s. Some are still working just to couple of reasons there, maybe just to keep active, but also just to keep a steady paycheck coming in because that's what they know best. And
right.
Tomorrow, but going back to what you said, longevity today, we can live much longer today. Medical science has enabled us to do that. All the more reason to start early, hunker down.
Yep.
And as you said throughout the episode, keep investing and watch things very carefully. All real good advice. We've got a few moments left, so just to sum it up, what do you say to the listening audience right now? We're sitting here in the middle of September. There's an election coming up in November. A lot of people, the economy, as I said at the outset, is undergoing once again some fluctuations. What piece of sound advice can you give listeners right now?
It's to ignore the politics of the election, to realize that what's being promised is not likely to materialize, and to focus on what the Fed is doing, cutting interest rates. The Fed manipulates interest rates and monetary policy for one reason. It's the long-term outlook for the economy. Cutting rates is adding gas to the fire at the economy. Cutting rates is something the Fed does when there's clouds on the horizon that suggests there's a slowdown coming of some magnitude. And the speed at which the Fed cuts rates is really indicative of what the economy is expected to do. The jobs number is going to weaken. It's whether or not we're going to enter a recession or just skirt by and have a soft landing that people have talked about. Focus on the Fed, ignore the politics, keep a diversified portfolio, and talk to your advisor if you have concerns about the risk level in your portfolio and dial in the amount that's appropriate for you.
Sounds good to me. Rich, if people want to reach out to you directly, get information, maybe schedule an appointment to sit and meet with you, how might they do that?
they can call and talk to me or any member of my staff. We're all certified financial planners. The phone number is 508-795-0264. And the website is Carr Financial, that's C-A-R-R Financial, carfinancial.com.
That sounds like great advice to me. I'm not one of those people who just say, hey, I'm diving into that next. That looks like the greatest opportunity. And as Richard has pointed out, not to be timid or shy, but certainly think before. I think it all comes down to that. Think before you act. It is indeed your money, your hard-earned money that you've worked so hard for. And at the end of the line, we want to be able to get on the golf course a couple of days a week without having to worry about whether you can keep up with the membership fees. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.